runs off Ayin Zion over to Aleph. Approximately 15 lines down from the top. First word in the line is Torah. And we're up to Omar Rabba. Omar Rabba bar Rav Huna Omar Rav Nachman Kosel Shebein Shtei Chatzeros. So we're talking about two Chatzeros on different levels. One is lower and one is higher. Something that's very common even in our times. Tzido Echad Gavoa Asor Tfachim. One side of, in other words, when you take a look at this kosel from the perspective of one particular chatzer, let's say that chatzer is on a higher level, then the kosel itself is gavoa asar tfachim v'rochav arba. It has the dimensions of 10 tfachim in height and 4 tfachim in width. V'tzido ha'echad, the second chatzer, is much lower down. And it's basically on ground level, shovel ha'aretz, which means that the kosel is very close to the ground level of that chatzer on the other side, which is not above 10 tfachim. So the last sugya that we spoke about was when you have a kosel between two chatzeros, who has rights to put things on top of the kosel? And here, Rabba's going to paskin, nosnim oso, the rights to use this kosel on Shabbos, which means to climb up onto the wall and put his utensils on top of the wall or take them down from on top of the wall. And even though these utensils were in his house at the time of the onset of Shabbos, he's allowed to put it on top of the wall. To which one of the two Balei Chatzeros will we give these rights and leniencies to allow him to use the top of the wall? Lazesha Shovel Aretz. To the lower Chatzer, which is Shovel Aretz. Well, again, you have to be careful here. The word Shovel Aretz should not be taken literally. Shovel Aretz means it's within 10 tfachim. In other words, the height of the kosel from the perspective of the lower chatzer is within 10 tfachim. Why we can give it to the rights to the underdog? You know, sometimes the liberals want to give rights to the underdog, but that's not what this is about. And the answer is Mishum Dahava Lazet Tashmisho Menachas V'Lazet Tashmisho Kasha. It means that who has easy access to the top of the kosel? In the case of the higher chatzer, he's got to climb all the way up. It's very dangerous also to go on the top of this kosel. And that's called lo nicha tashmishte. That's called tashmisho bekosh. It's very difficult for him. But for the lower one, for him to use the kosel, that's a cinch. It's within, you know, arm stretch, so to speak. And now Rabba establishes a principle, a general principle, which could be applied in any such situations. We'll see other scenarios where this principle will apply. And that is, kol laze benachas v'laze bekosh, nosim laze shetashmisho benachas. Whenever we have an area that is accessible, theoretically, to two different chatzeros, two different people and two different... We're going to earmark that area and the use of that kosel for the person who has easier access and it's more comfortable for him to use it. So I'll just read to you a comment here of the Ritva. The Mishnah had said that if you have a kosel that's 4 tfachim wide, then both chatzeros are enjoined from taking things from the kosel down to the aretz or bringing them up on top of, from the chatzer on top of the kosel. Because the kosel, since it has the width of arba tfachim, is considered a makom li'atzmo. and it's a reshush al shneim, and you might say, well, let them both create an eruv together. No, they cannot create an eruv together, because if it's gavah yud tfachim, since it's 10 tfachim high, then the Rabbanan said you cannot make an eruv. However, the Chachamim say that if Shimushe HaKosel Shobal HaChot Shekarka Gavoa Tidirim, if let's say one of the two Chatzeros has a Shimush Tadir, constantly uses the Kosel, then Yechoshev, we consider the Kosel, again as far as Shabbos is concerned, Ki'ilu Hu Reshusel Shobal HaChot Shezu Bilvat. It's not like the Kosel is now being shared by two people, which would require an Eruv, and we say there's no Eruv on a Mokum that's above 10 Tfachim. Here we're going to say no. It's not that both Chatzeros have access to this Kosel, even though theoretically, in truth, they both do have access to the top of the Kosel. But since it's more accessible to one of the two Chatzeros, that's called Nicha Tashmishto, therefore, we say that this Kosel, so to speak, belongs to him, because he has easy, comfortable access to the Kosel, and it's his Rishus, it's exclusively his. And all the people who share that Chatzar would be allowed to take Kalim from their homes, in other words, Kalim that was Shoveis on Erev Shabbos in their homes, put it out through the Chatzar on top of the Kosel. Says the Ritva, that we had a shita of Rabbi Yochanan earlier, that we're talking about a kosel that has the width of 4 tfachim. Masha Enkein, in contrast, if there's no width of 4 tfachim, then both of them, both of the chatzeros, are allowed to be metaltil from the chatzer to the kosel, and that's because the kosel has the status of a mokum ptur, which would mean that our sugya today, according to the Ritva, our sugya that we learned of Rava, must be addressing a case where not only is the kosel 10 tfachim high, but it's also 4 tfachim wide, and therefore it's not a mokom p'tur, it becomes a serious mokom, or a shus b'fnei atzmo, and then we have to determine which of the two balei chatzeros will have quote-unquote exclusive rights to use the top of the kosel, take his kelim from inside his house, through the chatzer, onto the top of this kosel, and we're going to decide that it's the lower chatzer because it's noach tashmishto, he has easier access. Now, even though I presented to you the Ritva, who is one of the Rishonim, the Achronim are not happy with this Ritva. Hagon Yaakov, who we quoted a million times, v'chazan ish, tomu al dvarav, ad kan lo kom Rabbi Yochanan sheshnei mutarim. When did Rabbi Yochanan say that both of the chatzeros are allowed to use the top of the chatzer if it's less than 4 tfachim in width? Rakish eshimusham shel shneim bekosel b'shava. If, for example, this kosel, which is very tall, relatively tall, and it's not very wide, it's narrow, and it's accessible equally to both of the chatzeros, is sover Rabbi Yochanan? Rabbi Yochanan is going to say that in such a case that it's accessible to both the chatzeros, so then the chachamim are not going to be so machmir in this case when there's no din of reshus according to Torah law because it's very narrow, it's less than 4 tfachim. U'kishem shebekosel shebein reshus hayoch l'shisarab emutu l'shneim l'katef olom kam kan b'reshusos. Avol kan shech shivus hakosel kechatzer shel bala chotzer anemucha. This is not a case like Rabbi Yochanan where two people have equal access and equal benefit and use from the top of the kosel, but rather the bottom chotzer has access, a more comfortable, easy access to the kosel. Is therefore reze kechelek michatzero. Rabbi Yochanan will say that it's part of his chatzer, it's an extension of his chatzer, and just like his chatzer has 4 tfachim in width, so too his kosel has 4 tfachim in width, and therefore for the other bal chatzer it's going to be prohibited to use it. So the Ritva, again according to the position of the Gaon Yaakov and the Chazon Ish is not correct when he assumes that we're talking about a case of Rochav Dalu Tfachim, because if it's less than Rochav Dalu Tfachim, both Balei Chatzeres are equally permitted to use the top of the Kosel, as Rabbi Yochanan established back on the previous sugya, because Rabbi Yochanan was only matir both of them in a case where they both have equal shimush in that kosel, and since it, Rabbi Yochanan argues that since it's less than four tefachim in width, and on a Torah level it doesn't have the status of reshus, the rabbanon are not going to be machmir, and they're going to allow both chatzeros to use that top of the kosel. But in a case where the kosel could be defined as an extension of someone's reshus, even though it's less than four tefachim in width, it's part of his chatzer because he has easy access to this, to the top of the kosel, and therefore Rabbi Yochanan is going to say that the other bala chatzer is not permitted to use the top of this kosel at all. That's the position of the Acharonim. So I'm just mentioning to you the two views of the Ritva on the one hand and the Acharonim on the other hand. Now the Gemara wants to discuss not a kosel that goes above ground between two chatzeros, but rather a charitz. A charitz is a subterranean depth that has depth. It has 10 tefachim below the ground level. And once again, you have two chatzeros. One is higher than the other. Omar Av Shizbi, Omar Av Nachman, Charitz Shebein Shtei Chatzeros. What's the case? Tzido Echad, if you look from one chatz, one of the two chatzeros on this side, is Amok Asara. This chatzer is a little bit higher up, and therefore the depth of this pit, we'll call it, is Asara Tfach, Tzido Echad. On the other side, the other chatz is Shavala Aretz. Right, this chatzer is lower down, and the depth of the, of again, I'm going to use the word a pit here, but it's called a charitz in Hebrew, is less than 10 tefachim. So it means now that instead of the chatzer that is high above the charitz, where he doesn't have such easy access to the pit. Let's say they pour water in the pit, whatever they use it for. The other fellow, in the other chatzer, the second chatzer, he's considered shavala aretz, and the karka of his ground is lower, as we said before, is nosino, so who gets schus to use this charitz, and to bring his kelim out into the charitz? Lazesh shavala aretz. Right, the Bala Chatzer, who is lower down. Why? Because for him, he doesn't have a difficult challenge to get access there. Mishum da'avilei lozet tashmisho benachas v'lozet tashmisho bekoshet. Once again, applying the rule of Rabba, the lower Chatzer has an easier access to the charitz. And like the previous case, where the lower chatzer had easier access to the top of the kosel, which was now less than 10 tefachim, here too, in the case of Rav Shizbi, the lower chatzer has easy access to the charitz, because the distance between his ground level chatzer and the charitz is less than 10 tefachim. Utzrichi, and now I need both cases. We need the case of Rav Shizbi, in the name of Rav Nachman, and the case of Rava, who also was quoting Rav Nachman. Diashmina bekosel, if we only had the chiddush in the case of kosel, that we single out one of the two balei chatzeros for use for the top of the kosel, and that's going to be the one whose chatzer is lower, is mishum debegovasa mishtamshe inshi. Meaning, that we're going to apply these rulings and these principles in a case where there's a hergel, there's regulus, to use that area. And since people use that area and they take the kelim and they put it there, therefore it's considered shimusho noach, and we'll just make a decision and sort of a toss-up between two chatzeros, which one has a more comfortable position vis-a-vis this area. So in the case of gova, of a kosa that goes above the ground, that's called mishtamshi inshi. It's quite common for people to use the top of the kosel. And therefore, the Rabbanan are going to establish and decide which of the two chatzeros has exclusive rights on Shabbos to use the top of the kosel. Al Chritz, which is something that is below ground, even if it's not below 10 tfachim, is biyom kolomish tamshi inshi. Generally speaking, it's not regilus, it's not hergel that people would bend down and use the area that's below the ground, lomish tamshi inshi. A malo, I might think that we're not going to give a special schus shimush, you know, a right to use it to one of the balei chotzer, in this case the lower chotzer, because even for him it's tashmisho kosher. It's not very comfortable and it's not popular to use it. So it's like a case of lo nichalei tashmishto to either of them. And therefore, Rav Nachman has to tell me the chiddush that even in the case of a gay, even though it's below ground and it's not generally nicha tashmishto, it's a chritz, we're still going to isolate one of the two Bali Chatzer is the lower chatzer, and give him exclusive rights to use that area. The Yashmina b'chritz, and if Rav Nachman only told me the second halacha of chritz, I would have said that when do we give a zchus shimush to one of the two Bali Chatzer, the one who's lower down, that's only mishun deloba isa tashmishta. He's not afraid to use a chritz. No way he's going to fall off a chritz. Aval kosel, but in the case of a kosel, when you place objects on top of the kosel, they're not in such a secure way. The wind could blow and push them off the wall. Humpty Dumpty, right? Is the be'isa. Be'isa means afraid. Tashmishta to use it. Again, it's not called noach tashmishto. Emolo, I might have thought that maybe in this case, the Rabbanan are not going to allow one of the two Bali Chatzeres, namely the lower Chatzer, to have use of the top of the kosel, because it's not considered a place that's noach tashmishto. People are afraid of the heights, and we need Rav Nachman to tell me that nevertheless, even in the case of a kosel, it's considered shimusho benachas, and the bala chotzer, who doesn't have a gova of 10 tfachos, he's on the lower level, he's allowed to use the kosel and take out the kelim from his bayis. Now, what happens if the kosel between these two chatzeros is 10 tfachim high on both sides, and therefore neither of them are allowed to use the top of the kosel? Let's assume it's 4 tfachim wide. Bolimato. What recommendation can we give him, and what are the halachic parameters of mute? This reminds us of the first Gemara in Masecht Erevin, if you remember, when he put the Korah above 20 Amos. And the question is, how could he be Mamayit? And there was a landfill, different possible ways. So here also, he wants to be Mamayit the Kosel that should be less than 10 Tfachim height, so that now at least one of the Bali Chatzeros will gain, the one who has better access, easier access. So he wants to now lower the height of the kosel on his side of the chotzer, and then now it becomes tashmisho benachas, and the Gemara thinks that the mute could be by creating some sort of a landfill, what we call a tail, and what he does is he takes karka, he takes dirt, pushes it up against the kosel, so that now the distance between the dirt on top and the kosel all the way on top is less than 10 tfachim. Or perhaps he could build himself something that's called an itzdabah, which is a chair that's made of bricks, and he puts that chair up against the kosel. Or perhaps, as we'll soon see later, he can perhaps put up what's called pisos eitzim. He can put logs or planks of wood and rest them against the kosel. And in my Gemara, I have a couple of pictures here. I have one on the side here, on the right side, where he has logs that are shisi v'aref, right? They go this way and that way. He's got a whole pile of logs. Or he has a tail. You can see on the right side, he's got, they colored it very beautifully, this round, brownish, two-colored brown tail. And in the middle, he's got a chair. So he has all three options here. And this is all going to be mamayit, the gova, the height of the 10 tefachim of the kosel. So the Gemara establishes the following rule. Im yesh b'mi'uto arba, mutal ishtamish b'chol ha-kosel kulo. In other words, if the part that he diminished from the kosel, let's say the tail or this itzdabah, or for example the pisos of eitzim, are four tefachim, so they climb up four tefachim from the ground to the height of four tefachim of the kosel, then those four tefachim are considered like a Pesach. It's almost like he opened up a Pesach in the kosel. And now we're going to calculate the height from the top of the Pesach all the way to the top of the kosel. And guess what? It's not going to be Asar Tefachim. Therefore, you can use the kosel, and that's considered benachas. It's almost as if he is entering the kosel through a Pesach. Again, I would have called it a ladder, so to speak. You know, he's climbing up something, and he calls it a Pesach. And now he's allowed to take his kelim that was Shoves on the outside of Shabbos in his house, and so to speak, climb through this Pesach until he gets to the above the Pesach, and from above the Pesach to the top of the wall is less than 10 tefachim. And now, again, he has set up. Now, let's just backtrack for a minute. The kosel has a height of 10 tefachim for both chatzeros. If one of the balei chatzeros takes the initiative and builds up this Pesach in one of those three ways that we discussed, then he generates an Isur on the Baal Chatz HaShniyah. Because the Baal Chatz HaShniyah, from his side, he's going to have to climb 10 tefachim in order to reach the top of the kosel. The Baal Chatz from this side that set up this kisei or this tail or the logs that we mentioned before, he is now been memayit the kosel on his side. He has now exclusive rights to use the top of the kosel. The other Baal Chatzah cannot use the top of the Chatzah. V'im lav, but even after he builds this wall, I'm sorry, he builds this little tail or this chair or the logs, he still doesn't reach four tefachim high on the side of the kosel, is then ein mishtamish el keneged amut. The only part of the kosel that we're going to allow him to get used from is keneged amut, meaning the kosel that is at the end of these 3.9 tefachim. right? You know, imagine there are crevices in the coastal, so he's going to be allowed to use those crevices that are below four tefachim, but they're connected this Pesach. Again, I'm going to use the word Pesach instead of having to repeat the three options. Is that called Eina Mishtamish Ela Kenegin Amiyut? But the rest of the Kosel, which means from 3.9 Tfachim and above until the top of the Kosel, which is 10 Tfachim above the ground, he's not allowed to use, because this is not called a successful Miyut for the balance, the height of the Kosel. Again, it's only a Miyut for that area itself. Kenegin HaPesach, but not above the Pesach. He has not yet created a Pesach. The minimum height of the Pesach has to be 4 tefach. So the Gemara is not happy. Ma nefshach? I don't get it. Iahani miyuta. If this miyut is called a miyut, meaning if you're recognizing that all the area below the height of 4 tefachim is considered a Pesach, then Bekulei Kosel Ishtamish, why can't we calculate from the top of that Pesach, which is, let's say, 3.9 Tfachim, till the top of the Kosel, and you have less than 10 Tfachim, it should be Muta, Viloahani, and if it doesn't work as a Pesach to allow you to use the top of the Kosel, Zafilu Kenegit Amiut Namilo, then it's not a Pesach. How could it be Matir? How could it allow you to have Shimush even in the Kenegin HaMiyut, even that part which is 3.9 Tfachim from the ground? Omer Avina, so Avina says that when we say Bolimato, we don't mean that he's being Mamait the Karka that's close to the Kosel. In that case, it wouldn't work at all if he doesn't have 4 Tfachim, even Kenegin HaMiyut, but rather Kagonsha Okar Chuya Mirosho. The Miyut was accomplished by removing a chulia, meaning a, let's say, a brick from the top of the wall, and now he's got on the top of the wall like an open space which was occupied previously by this chulia. Now the chulia was removed, so now if we calculate from the ground up until this chulia, it's less than 10 tefachim. And that's called miut. He says, and this is just a summary of Rashi, he says, Hilkach, kisha orach ha-chulia arba tefachim, if the height of this chulia is 4 tefachim, harei hi mishameshes pesach l'chol ha-kosel. Why is this called a Pesach for the Kosel? After all, it's on the top. Ki darka hu ole u'mishtamish bo. I guess he's using this opening as a kind of a ladder, so to speak. And he's able to grab onto it, or step on it, and then use the top of the Kosel. Therefore, he's mutter to use the entire Kosel. However, kishe'ein arba tefachim, if this chulia is less than 4 tefachim, is eino chashuva l'shamish kepesach. It's not considered a Pesach, and therefore cannot be matir the shimush of the kosel. Now, we have an answer, says Ravina, to the question of why can I get a mute, it's mutter. And why is that? Chutz mi makom akiras hachulio, the place where we remove that part of the kosel, mutter l'shtamish, but why? L'fisha ein shom gova asar tfachin, v'eino nechshav rishus elke makom p'tur. In the first case that we understood in the Hava Mina before Ravina, that this Pesach is on the bottom of the Kosel, then it's a Rishus Bifnei Atzma. Why? So let me just say something, and then I'll come back and see if what I say makes sense based on this Rashi. Is that second? Where was that? Just 1 second. Just give me a second. I had. Oh, there it is. There, I'm sorry. Samach Lekosin. In other words, the Pesach is Samach Lekosel. And if the Pesach is Samach Lekosel, then it has like the same status as the Kosel. And the Kosel, therefore, and remember we said that the Kosel was 10 Tfachim high and 4 Tfachim wide. That means that the top of the Kosel is Rishus HaYochid. And anything that attaches itself to the Kosel is also, by extension, part of the Rishus HaYochid. So therefore, we have to reject this possibility of setting up the four tefachim on the bottom as a Pesach. Comes along Ravina, he says the four tefachim is on the top. And what happens is, not that he added something to the kosel, but he removed something from the kosel, which is called Okar Chulyo Mirosho. Ah, if it's Okar Chulyo Mirosho, then that spot, which is now air, that used to be occupied by that chulya, doesn't have the height of asar tefachim. Right? Because when the chulya was in place, the top of the chulya was 10 tefachim from the ground. When he removes the chulya, he's within 10 tefachim, less than 10 tefachim from the ground. And that's called a makom ptur. That's not a rishus unto itself. So again, when he builds the various kinds of those three types of psochim of Pesach, that's something that is attached to the wall. The wall has the gova of Asar Tfachim, and therefore we have a Rishus Bifnei Atzma. But in the case of Okar Chulya, where you're left with airspace on top, that's considered less than 10 Tfachim, because it is less than 10 Tfachim, and it's a Makom Ptur. And if it's a Makom Ptur, we're going to allow that Balachotza, who's clever enough to remove that Chulya, to have access and put his Kelim inside that Charitz, or inside that Chulya. Amar Rav Yechiel. Did I skip? Just 1 second. Amar Rav Yechiel. Kofa Seifel Mimait. If he takes some sort of a receptacle, let's call it a sefel, a drinking receptacle or something of that sort, and he turns it upside down, if it has the height of 4 tefachim, oh, he has a diagram, and he has it as a width of 4 tefachim. So let's just see if you need both a width of 4 tefachim and a height of 4 tefachim. He says, V'yeshlo, yeshbo orech arba tefachim. So it stretches from east to west, 4 tefachim of the kosel, and he places this, attaching it to the kosel. Now the kosel is 10 tefachim, but now he has this sefel which is four tefachim wide, is memayit. He's allowed to use the kosa. So we have to understand how this Rav Yechiel is different from what we had before. I mean, we had different ways of creating a Pesach. Maybe he's saying that a Sefel Vamai Dovar Hanitel B'Shabbosu. I think what he's saying is the following. I'm just going to take a stab at it. In the other cases, he attaches something to the kosel that's Eino Nitel B'Shabbos. Now I'm trying to figure out what does that mean, Eino Nital? In the case of the pasim of Eitzim, okay, you could say that's Mukta maybe. But that's not gonna help me for the Itztaba. In the case of the tail, he would have to unearth the tail. That you're not allowed to do on Shabbos. But what about the Itzibah? Maybe the Itzibah is actually nailed down to the Kosa. And then you'd have a problem with Binyan, a Melecha Soser. In any event, Rabbi Yechiel's case is a Sefel, and that's called a Dovar Hanital B'Shabbos. Now, Dovar Hanital B'Shabbos Eino Memayit. The Gemara objects to Rabbi Yechiel because we're talking about something that's only temporarily there. Again, we're going to have to assume the Itzibah, as I said before, was somehow attached to the Kosa. But here we're talking about a Sefel, which comes and goes, so it's only a temporary addition to the Kosa. How could that possibly achieve Miut? Dovar Anito B'Shavas Eino Memai. You can't say that it lowers the kosel just because right now, by chance, you have a sefel there. Lo tzricha dechavre biara. He attaches the sefel to the ground. How does he do such a thing? Al yidei shenosan olav afar. Shenosan olav ofar. So what happens is you have this, you know, this four tefachim wide kli that you turn the upside down, and you push the dirt around it on all sides, and that creates a connection to the kosel. That's called chavre bi'ara. I'm sorry. He says not. I made a mistake. I said that he connects it to the kosel. That's not what it says here. It says here that he connects it to the aretz. And that means that it's on Shabbos it's permanent. Why? Once you connect something to the ground, then you can't remove it from the ground. And let's assume that Afar is Mukta. So when he moves the Sefel, he's going to be moving Mukta. So that's going to give it a permanent nature. It's a permanent attachment, at least as far as Shabbos is concerned, to the Kosel, because of the Isur Mukta. Once he places the offer around this Kli, it becomes Mukta. Now again, we still haven't answered our original question. How is this different from the sugya that we had before of a Pesach? Of course, we said that the Pesach was a permanent Pesach. Now the Gemara is saying that even in the case of Kafa Sefel, it's a permanent Chibur. So the Gemara is the following kashya: V'chi chibre bi'ara mai havi. So what if he now pushes the dirt around the entire sefel and attaches it to the ground? Why can't he take it away? Why can't he remove it? It's still temporary. But Tanya, we learned in a brisa, we have something called tiltul min atzad. That if you have something that's surrounded by offer, and if you move it, then the offer falls this way and that way, you're allowed to move it. It's not an Isur Tiltul. Paga, which is an unripened date. Shetmina b'seven. So he takes this radish and it was a fig, and he submerges it in straw. And I think what's happening is that this fig is unripened. If you put it under the ground and you surround it with, in this case, Tevin, that's going to speed up the process of its development. But now comes Shabbos, and the question is, how do you get access to the Puga, the Paga? So the answer is that you lift up the paga, you lift up this fig, and the ground falls on this side and the other side. Again, that's only if the top of the fig is exposed. Correct? And therefore, he is able to have direct contact with the fig without moving the offer. Well, charora, we have another case of a small cookie. They used to cook these like a barbecue on an open, open coals. And it's mina b'kacholim. And before Shabbos, it was buried inside the coals. And the coals are mukta. In magula miktsasa, if part of the pago or the charora is exposed, then he tells us you're allowed to take it out on Shabbos. And the teven, which is mukta, or the gecholim that are mukta, are going to fall to the sides, and that's called tiltum in atzad. That's an indirect moving of mukta. So now let's apply that rule to the case of the sefel. We said that the sefel was permanent because you attached offer on all sides, and therefore it's Eino Nitol B'Shabbos. And that's called Chabre B'Ara. Well, I have news for you, says the Gemara. That's not Eino Royal Tiltul. It's Royally Natal Misham. Why? Because the offer is going to fall on its own. He's not directly removing the offer. And therefore there's no Isur, violation of an Isur Mukta. So why is turning this Sefel, according to Rav Yechiel, an adequate way of doing Miut? It's got to be a permanent change. Hachmayaskinon, the Isle Ognayim. Ognayim, he says, is a Safa shenichpeles hachutza, ukshemachabers hasefel arutz alidea ofar, ofar shesvivos hasevel, hasefel munach al osam ha ognayim, v'nimtza shekshenoto bisham hasefel magbia esa ofar. And that's awesome. So what's the case here in Rabbi Yechiel's frame of reference? It's a case where the sefel has a safa. It has a rim around it. And when he lifts up the sefel from the ground, then the ofar is going to, the offer apparently is sitting on these ognayim. Let's just see. Let's see if, just for a second, if we can clarify this further. He says it's a case where this basin has a rim, a protruding rim. When the basin is withdrawn from the ground, the surrounding dirt will not merely fall away from its sides. Okay. Again, if the surrounding dirt would fall away from the sides, that's like the case of the puga, the pago, and the charora, which was called tiltu min atzad. So there's no permanency. You're allowed to remove this, the sefel, which, by the way, he translates as a basin. Okay, I didn't have that word in mind. I thought of a receptacle. But he says when there's a protruding rim around this receptacle, then what's going to happen is the rim is going to catch and uplift the dirt that's packed above it. I think what he means is that we're almost digging a hole into the dirt. And therefore the basin may not be moved. And therefore it's memait the gova of the kosel, because it is enonital b'shabbos. It's a permanent mute. So the Gemara says, v'chi islei ognayim, even if it has this rim, my havas, so what's the difference? But now we learned in a Mishnah, hatomein lefes. So in those days when they wanted to store vegetables and so forth, they would very often dig below the ground and submerge it under the ground. So he took a lefes, which he says is a turnip, what's known as a radish, and he submerged it tachas hagefen, underneath a grapevine. In the English, he writes for storage purposes. I'm not sure if it's got to be for storage. It could be that that also helps the maturation process of a vegetable. So now the question is, would he be allowed to remove the turnip or the radish from this burial ground, so to speak? And the Mishnah says the following. It all depends. Bisman. Right now we're on Dafayin Zayin Amid Beis. Bisman shem miktas olav megulim. If part of the leaves are exposed above the ground. So now we have another issue here. Besides Shabbos, we have a problem of kilayim. Eino choshesh lo mishum kelayim. Okay. I guess he's planting more than... No, I'm sorry. He's planting one vegetable, but he's actually burying it below the ground, directly contiguous to a vineyard. So he's got a yerek that's planted, again, I'll get back to that word in a second, together or in close proximity to a vine. That's kelayim. But the answer is that in this case, we don't have to worry about kelayim because he's not planting it. this was already grown. He says the vegetables did not take root, and therefore no violation has occurred. So I would say the following. It depends really what he has in mind. If he's just using it for storage, the way he said it before, then there should be no problem with kolayim at all. But if, on the other hand, he's using it to speed up the process of maturation, and the vegetables will gain some sort of nutrients from the ground, then that's planting. And he's planting it too close to the vineyard, and it should be awesome. So what's Eino Choshesh Mipnei Mishum Kilayim? And he says, because the vegetables have not yet taken root. So the din of Kilayim depends upon Ashrosha. Ashrosha means when it takes root. So again, he submerges a turnip or a radish underneath the ground in close proximity to a vine, to a vineyard. But as long as it hasn't taken root yet, there's no Iser Kilayim. V'lo Mishum Maaser. And likewise, if it hasn't taken root yet, then there's no chiyuv of trumas and masros. It's not tevel. And he adds here in the note, which is obvious, I thought of it myself, that he already was mafrish maser from this turnip. So even if the already tithed vegetables were larger. So let me go over that last point again as far as maser is concerned. He says that the vegetables were larger when they were removed from the ground than they were at the size when they were originally buried in the ground, because again, as we said before, the vegetable underneath the ground is absorbing some of the nutrients from the ground. He says, maybe he's chayav in maser on that increment. He says he can attribute the increase to expansion due to ground moisture. So it's not that the vegetable itself is growing, it just has more water in it. But the flesh, so to speak, of the vegetable is not increasing in size. If, however, the vegetables have actually increased in size due to growth, in other words, it's not a matter of absorbing liquids, then he's chayav in trumas and maasros on the increment between what the size of the lefes as it was at the time, as it were, I guess you'd say, at the time of the burial, as opposed to the extra increase in size due to growth at the time that he's taking it out of the ground. V'lo mishum shvius. And once again, if the vegetable is not growing in the ground during the seventh year of Shemitah, then there's no kedusha shvius. And this is not a planting process. He's just, as we said before, either storing it, or maybe it's absorbing moisture, but it's not really growing. So there's no din of Zriya. But now we get to the punchline for our purposes. V'nitolim b'shabbos. He's allowed to grab onto the leaves and remove, right, we said, miktsos ola magula, and remove the turnip from the ground. So we see clearly that even though he's removing soil, the soil is going to obviously spread apart this way or that way, it's mutter. Now, here we have to say that it's not an issue of tiltum min atzad, that the offer is being moved. That itself would not be an issue. But the issue that we want to raise is that he's digging into the ground. So, in the case of the basin that had the rim, we said that when he lifts up the basin since the rim sort of penetrates into the ofar that's surrounding this basin, the sefel, it's like digging into the ofar, and therefore it should be prohibited. Right? So what was the Gemara's final conclusion? Isle ognayim. And that's why it's considered mamayit. So it's mamayit, the govah kosel, because you can't take it out on Shabbos. So Gemara says, but here it says nitolim b'Shabbos. What's the difference between the basin with the rim, where the rim is sort of penetrating into the ofar, and therefore when you remove the basin, you'd be violating meleches chofer by creating a hole in the ofar, and our case of a turnip that's on the ground, and if you grab the leaves that are above ground, you're going to sort of cut into the ofar, and therefore you're going to also be in violation of chofer of excavating. And how could the Braisa allow this, or the Mishnah, I should say, how should the Mishnah allow this? It must be that this is not similar at all to chofer. And he says here, since the leaves are exposed, the vegetable is not considered attached to the ground. Right, so let's say you had a vegetable that's attached to the ground, and you remove the vegetable, then you're really digging a hole in the ground. And that would be meleches chofer. But here, we don't consider the vegetable as if it's attached to the ground, because the leaves are above the ground. And if we apply that logic to the basin, you should be allowed to remove the basin, because once again, the basin is not completely attached to the ground. And therefore, he's not violating meleches chofer when he removes the basin. So why do you tell me it's a miut and it's a permanent eino nitol b'Shabbos when it says notlim b'Shabbos? And where it says lo, that Rabbi Yechiel's case is a different case. He's not worried about removing the basin, but Sricha Deboi Marvachatzina. He's worried about the fact that the basin is so submerged to such an extent in the ground, and there's so much offer that surrounds it, that in order to dig up the basin and remove it, he has to bring a kli. He has to bring a mara or a chatzina, different types of hose. That he's not allowed to do, because once it's completely attached to the ground, that's considered chofer, and the proof, the barometer, is that he needs to get a hoe in order to remove it from the ground. And therefore, that's called a miut. That's called a permanent, as far as Shabbos is concerned, miut, to diminish the height of the wall, because there's no way he can remove the basin unless it's kind of, I hate to give the example in dentistry, but if you have a tooth and it's got its roots in the ground, in the gums, you have to, the dentist has to bring some heavy-duty machinery in order to remove, to extract the tooth. Here also, it's so embedded in the ground, in Rabbi Yechiel's case, that it could be considered a miut, because he would have to take a mar of a chatzina to remove it from the ground, and therefore it's considered a miut. It's a permanent fixture to the kosel. Okay, then, so that's where we're going to stop here on Daf Ayin Zayin Amud Beis, on the top of the Amud, at the two dots, which is line 4, Sulam HaMitzri. All right, so I wish you a meaningful fast and another day of Aser Simei Tshuva that should project us towards Yom Kippur. Shalom Aleichem, Rabbosai.